We're holding on page Mem He in Sanhedrin, the sixth line, Tanabon, middle of Rosh Kufimel. We talked yesterday about the Avodah Zarah of Pa'ur. We talked about this Goyish woman who found it so repulsive that she said she'd rather be sick again rather than have to worship it. So now the Gemara continues with another story involving this Avodah Zarah. Tanabon, and Maisa b'Savta ben Alas. It happened once with Savta, that was the fellow's name. He was a Yid, Rashi points out, as we'll see in the Gemara. Ben Alas, now Rashi explains that Ben Alas doesn't mean that his father's name was Alas, means he came from a place called Alas. One possibility, they say, in some of the dictionaries, is there's a place on the, in this week's parish, you have the borders of Eretz Yisrael listed, and you have, besides for Targum Onkelos, we know there's also a Targum Yonason on the Torah, although it's apparently not from Yonason, but Ozeal. But anyway, it defines the places using the, using the geographical names that were, that existed in his times. And one of the places on the border, Sdod, Targum Yonason translates as Avalos or something like that. So it may be the same place. Be that as it may, this Yid Savta from this place, Shehiskir Chamorlo, that is to Chav Machas, he one time rented his donkey to a certain Goyish lady. Now, the way it would work, usually, is that the donkey driver would go along with the donkey to tell it to guide it and tell it where to go and whatever, and she would be riding on it. Kivinshi Gila Pa'ur, they came to a place with a temple of Pa'ur. Omrlo, she tells the donkey driver, the Yid, Hampton, Ad Shekonis Fe'etze, wait till I go in, and I go out. After she comes out, as far as he knows, he doesn't realize it's a place of Avodah Zarah. As far as he knows, it's a public bathroom. So he tells her, you also wait over here while I go in, and then while I go in until I come out. She says, aren't you a Yid? He didn't chapsach. He says, my ichbaslich, what do you care? He didn't realize that it's a place of Avodah Zarah. Nichnas, he went in par b'fon of it. He opened up and went to the bathroom in front of it. The kinach b'chotmai, and even wiped himself with the idol's nose. The priests of this Avodah Zarah were praising him. And they were saying, never was anybody who worshipped it so comprehensively as you did. Because after all, if the point of it is to treat it in the most degrading way, you did that better than anybody else. Which would actually mean. What?
With
the hider, yeah. Tosfos points out that not necessarily would he be chayav chatas for that. The Rambam actually writes that he would if he didn't write later on. When he finds out what he did, he would be chayav chatas. On the other hand, Tosfos says maybe not. Maybe only if he means to worship it, the derech bizoyan, then he would be chayav chatas. So he doesn't know that kind of thing is also, then he would be chayav chatas. But Tosfos discusses, and different achronim discuss based on Tosfos, if like this it was a mistake that he bechlal didn't know it's an Avodah Zarah, would that actually make him chayav chatas somehow? Okay. Marsha points out, that the word Mekalsin over here in the Gemara can have a double meaning. Rashi translates it means they praised him. But, in Tanakh, actually, the Shurdash Kelas, Kuf Lamed Samach, means to make fun of, like Lag Vakelas Vagoyim. Only in Gemara terminology does it come to mean praising, apparently from a Greek root. So over here, the Gemara may be using it in a double sense. In other words, that they're making fun of him, that they themselves are saying, look at this, a Yid went and worshipped the Avodah Zarah more comprehensively than any of us. But on the surface, they're saying it's in a way of praising him, like, look what a good job you did. Mishnah goes on. Another one of the cases that approves the Mishnah is much of this parak is dealing with the cases, what kind of things a person does that make him chayev skila. So the Mishnah says, "Anosim mizara la molach," somebody who gives of his children to molach, as we're going to see in the Gemara. According to most Mephoshim, it doesn't involve burning the child. It just involves a ritual passing him through or over a fire, as we'll see soon. So now, the Mishnah says, "Ein chayev ad sheyim sel ha-moylech v'yava be'esh chola." He's chayev only if he gives over the child to moylech, that is to say, to the priest of moylech, and passes him through the fire. So Rashi learns that it means that he gives him to the priests, and they're the ones who carry the child through or between the fires. On the other hand, the Rambam writes that they give him back to the father, and the father is the one who walks him through. And the Ramban points out that seems to make better sense. How can you be mechayev the father with the fact that the priests do the actual maisa of walking him between or through the fires? Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Echad l'moylech v'echad b'sharav, v'edis k'chovim chayim. A person will be chayim, skila b'mezid, and chatas b'shogig, whether he does this kind of ritual for moylech or for any other getchkin. Reb Shimon says no, only if he does it to Molech would he be chayev and not otherwise. Meaning, in other words, it actually explains like this. The basic underlying machlokas is Molech itself an Avodah Zarah? So we always, even learn as kids, yeah, of course, Molech is an Avodah Zarah. This was the way of worshipping it. But one way of looking at it, Rashi explains, is that no, you could look at it that in fact it is an Avodah Zarah. Now, you have like this. In general, you're not allowed to worship any Avodah Zarah in the way it's normally worshipped. For example, going to the bathroom by Pa'ur or throwing stones at Merkulis or whatever. The Torah doesn't list every one of those individually. It says in general, you shouldn't say, Eicha Yavdua, Goyim Ela Selekeim. Don't say, how do these nations worship their gods? I'm going to do the same thing. From there, we learn the Isser of worshipping an Avodah Zarah in its normal way. So why does it have to spell it out by Molech? So according to this way of looking at it, the point would be that he has to do it exactly according to their ritual, namely giving to the priests and walking him through the fire, etc., as opposed to any other variation on that, he wouldn't be chayav. That's one way of looking at it. So now if he does the same thing for other Avodah Zarah, then he would also be chayav, because that would be considered a ritual that's done for other idols as well. The other way of looking at it is Molech in and of itself is not an Avodah Zarah. It's a goyish ritual that the goyim came up with for whatever reason, but not that they considered Molech in and of itself an Avodah Zarah. So now, again, the Torah, according to that way of looking at it, why does the Torah have to spell it out? Because we wouldn't be able to learn it from Eicha Yavdu, because Eicha Yavdu covers all the ones that they consider deities, that they consider gods, whereas Molech wouldn't be in that category. And nevertheless, the Torah is makbid on it and declares a person does this particular ritual is chayev skila.
When it says in the Torah,
what does
it mean?
When it says, Mazar Chalosit and Mahavil Amolach, it means don't give your children to be passed through to Molech. But the Torah doesn't specify is Molech an Avodah Zarah or not. So there you have it. So that's the thing. One way of looking at it is Avodah Zarah. But the point is, it has to be exactly that way that the priests define it, that you give the child to them. And according to Rashi, they're the ones who walk him through, according to the Rambam and the Ramban, that they give him back to the father and he walks him through, whatever. It has to be exactly that way, and if not, the person is not chayim. The other way of looking at it is that Molech is not an Avodah Zarah, and it's only for Molech. If a person does this, then he's chayim. But any other getchka that a person were to do, such a thing for, he would be potter. So the Gemara points out, in effect, Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon that we just quoted and Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus that we're going to quote now are both saying effectively the same thing. Abaya often does this in Shas. He'll often point out how there's different tanoim where when you analyze what they're saying, it comes out that they're saying the same thing in different words. Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon hadamar, and we said what Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon says, that he says that only if the person does it to Molech and not to any other Getchka, meaning that he holds that Molech is not considered an Avodah Zarah in and of itself. It's just considered, in other words, they would do it as like a ritual, for example, as a superstitious ritual, kind of, let's say, that they should have Havslocha in whatever area in life. So now, Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus, Titania, what does Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus say on the subject? And he says, Titania, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus, mitnei ma tofsa Torah, Loshen Molech. Why did the Torah use the name Molech for this ritual? It means Kol Shehim Lichu Aleihem. It means anything that they declare as a king over themselves that they call it a Molech. Vafilu Tzur, Vafilu Kesem. Even if they just take a pebble or a chip of wood and declare it, this is my Molech. Then now if a person now goes and then has priests over there and has and does the whole thing with the fires, then he would be Chayim. So therefore, the point is, in other words, people don't normally worship pebbles or chips of wood or whatever. The point is, in other words, that Reb Chanina ben Antignus, therefore, is saying it's not an Avodah Zarah, but we don't care whether they actually worship it as an Avodah Zarah. The point is that they're still using it as we're going to do this ritual in connection with this thing that we just declared a Molech on the spot. Rava, on the other hand, says, no, Molech Arai Ikebenayu. There is an actual difference. Reb Chanina ben Antignus and Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon are not really saying exactly the same thing. The nafkamina between them would be, what about a temporary molech? So let's say, for example, a pebble or a chip of wood. So Rav Chanina ben Antignus is clearly saying that a person is chayev in that case. On the other hand, Rav Elazar ben Reb Shimon would disagree with that. It does have to be a regular molech for a person to be chayev. But not if a person were to take something temporary, declare it a molech and do this, then according to Rav Elazar ben Reb Shimon, he would be potter. Okay. I'm Rav Yanai, so Rav Yanai says, explaining the Mishnah, in Chayev Anshim Suganu, Chole Yoni is Chayev, if he gives the child to the priests, and then they walk him over between the fires. And the Gemara also mentions Amar of Yehuda, Ein Chayev Avshu Yavin Anu Derech Ha'avara. He's Chayev, the skiller or kores or chatas, only if he does it Derech Ha'avara. Again, only in exactly the normal way that Moilach is that they usually do this ritual for Moilach. So Heichidami, how exactly did they do it? Amar Abaya Shraga Delivni B'Mitzi. They would have a row of bricks, a high row of bricks. So they would have. They'd put one row of bricks and then another and another to make like a high platform, so a high walkway in between. Nura mehai demitzi in the middle. Nura mehai gisav and nura mehai gisav. And then a fire on each side. So there would be a fire pit on each side, and then there would be this walkway made out of bricks in the middle, and the father with the child, or the priest with the child, as the case may be, would walk along that walkway. It actually points out, it can't be that, now again, there are some Mephoshim who learn that it means that the child was actually burnt. However, it actually says it can't be because the Gemara, first of all, the Gemara mentions, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but the Gemara mentions that if a person passes himself for Moloch, let's say he decides himself, I want to do this ritual not for my child, but for myself, he would be Potter. Now, if he gets burnt to death, you can't talk about Chayev or Potter anyhow. So therefore, obviously, we have to talk about that he survives the thing. Also, now, what about we learned, actually continues, what about we learned a couple of days ago about Chizkiyahu, that his father Ochaz tried to burn him in a fire for the Getchkes, and his mother had to smear him with salamandra blood ahead of time. Well, that wasn't, actually says, that wasn't Moloch, that was Elikei Tzvavayim, that was, we talked about over there, the gods of Tzvavayim, the ones that the Gemara said were worshipped in the form of a horse and a mule. So those, it had the pasuk actually says, Sofumus Bnei Embes Bnei Seim La'ish, that they would actually burn their children for it. So now Ochaz was trying to do that, and then Chizkiyahu was saved by his mother's foresight. But the actual Moloch itself, according to Rashi, and according to most Mephoshim, according to most Rishonim, doesn't involve actually burning the child. So that's one explanation, is that we have this walkway of bricks in the middle with a fire on each side. Rava says it's actually they would jump over the fire. K'mashvauta d'puya, like the jumping they would do on Purim. They used to have, you know, kids have always wanted to have fun on Purim. So back in those days, a popular way of doing that is they would make a pit in the ground with a fire, and they would jump over the fire, and that would be part of the Purim Simcha. So now, Rava describes the same way. Then Moloch would involve the same kind of thing, but they're doing it in honor of Moloch.
Zoroastric New Year's actually
the
jump over the fire.
Is where?
Zoroastrian.
Zoroastrians do that on their New Year's. Interesting. Okay. So apparently at some point, so either they got it from us or the other way around, or maybe Jews, maybe Jewish kids living under the Persian Empire picked it up from them. Who knows? Yeah, interesting. Fine. The Gemara goes on. Omer Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina. Sholosh krisis b'avodas k'chovim loma. Why did it say three times koris by a person who worships Avodah Zarah? Two of them are actually in connection with Moloch. Now again, even if we say that Moloch is Avodah Zarah, then Avodah Zarah is Avodah Zarah. Even if we say that not, Rashi says, nevertheless, we can still call it, by a general extension, we can call it Avodah Zarah. The Rambam, for example, brings these halachas of Moloch in Hilchos Avodas Pechavim. So in a more extended sense, you can call it an Avodah Zarah kind of thing. So two of them are there. The third one, Rashi explains, is in Parshas Shlach, where you have a pasuk that says, Ki Dvar Hashem Bozer. It talks about a Megadeth, a person who blasphemes and insults Hashem. Ki Dvar Hashem Bozer. He insulted the word of Hashem. Mitzvah Hefer. He chores HaNefesh Ahi. And what is a mitzvah? Dvar Hashem and mitzvah. Rashi explains that that means the mitzvah not to worship Avodah Zarah. It's called Dvar Hashem because it was the first thing we were told by Har Sinai. Now, it does say he chorus, but we don't count those as two separate things, so we count them as one, as the Gemara is going to say soon, give a turd of Koloshim Re'adam, and therefore the point is we have three different places where it talks about chorus. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. Actually, Tosfos over here gives a different explanation. The third one is right there in Achrimos. It mentions all the Arayas, and then it mentions Moloch in between them, and at the end it says anybody who does these things, v'nichrusu. So therefore, there's your third chorus in connection with Avodah Zarah. So why do we need three? So Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina says, Achas l'kedarka, one teaches us that if a person worships the Avodah Zarah in the normal way, po'er to po'er, throwing rocks to miraculous, etc., then he's chayev chorus. Skila if he does it with Eidim Vasarah, but chorus if he does it with Mezid and there's no Eidim Vasarah. But Achas l'chaloi kedarka, one teaches us that with Moloch specifically, even if he does it shaloi kedarka, So namely, in other words, that it's not normal to do the... Now, you have like this. There are four avoidas that a person is chayav for doing to any avodah zarah, whether it's the normal way of doing it for this particular one or not. They are zibuach, shechting something in its honor, kitur, burning it, nisuch, pouring out a liquid in its honor, or yishachava, or bowing to it. Now, Moloch is not normally worshipped with any of those four things. Nevertheless, a person is chayav kares for doing those things to Moloch as well. So the second one teaches us for that, v'achas v'moloch, and one tells us for the particular ritual of Moloch that we were talking about before. Again, following the opinion that Moloch is not avodah zarah, so therefore it couldn't just be included in the normal thing like Poer to Poer and the rest of them. What about the Gemara says in Laman Dorma Moloch avodah zarah? What about according to the opinion we said before that Moloch is a regular Genshka, and then you have the rules for it would be like for any other, the four avodahs, the person would be chayev, whether that's the normal way or not. So then, Koris by Moloch, Lomali, then why point to that? Why does it say Koris by Moloch? And the answer is Lamavi b'nei Shaloi Kedavka. That tells us, unlike what we said before, that if he does with Moloch Shaloi Kedavka, that he would be Potter. Now we're going to say Mavi b'nei Shaloi Kedavka, or no, the other way around, we're going to say that we said before, if he does this ritual of Moloch to a different Getchka, then in fact he would also be Chayev. Because it was saying, once the Torah is makban on it by Moloch, then it means it applies to other avodah zarah and singles it out, even though it's the same as every other ritual of avodah zarah, then it means a person is chayav for the other ones as well. What about Olamanda Omer Megadah Avodah Tchavmi? What about, though, there's another opinion, though, that says, that when the Torah says, Es Hashem Hu Megadah Finichrasa, So according to one opinion, that refers to worshipping avodah zarah in a way of speaking, namely Rashi says he sings to it. So the Maharshal explains, let's say this avodah zarah is normally worshipped by singing, and he sings a song in front of it. So that's an avodah, so that avodah zarah. Now it doesn't involve a maisa as much, unlike the regular avodahs which involve a maisa with his body. He was just singing. Nevertheless, according to this opinion, the Torah is telling you that nevertheless he's chayav kares. So then, according to that, Kodesh v'Megadif Lomali, then why would the Torah have to mention Kodesh in that connection? If it's the normal way of worshipping that avodah zarah, then of course he's chayav. Now, there is a different opinion, namely that the different way we're going to have now, Machlokas, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Shmuel, about that, whether Megadif refers to somebody who worships avodah zarah with his voice, such as singing, or whether it means somebody who curses Hashem, Mevarach Hashem. So according to the opinion that it refers to avodah zarah, kores the megadif lomali, why would the Torah have to tell us kores by the megadif? So look at the Tanya. That we need, as we learn in a braisa, as follows. In connection with megadif, the pasuk says alone there three, just there three times. The pasuk says three times, just there three times. The Torah uses the expression v'nichrasa. He chorus, when the Torah says that a person who is Megadif and Kidvar Hashem Baza, he reviled and then blasphemed the word of Hashem, so he chorus, cut off, he will be cut off. That means, he chorus, he will be cut off, or get chorus in this world. We have these days in Tanya, that everyone was explaining, that the Bizman Shabbos Nekash Chayim, a person would actually lose his Chayos from Kedusha, and therefore he'd physically die by the age of 50 or 60, whereas nowadays a person gets his Chayos from Klippos, and therefore he's able to live longer than that, but yeah. Anyway, Tikoris for the Mazer, his Neshama will be cut off in this world. Tikoris for the Mabar, and his Neshama will also be cut off in the next world, unless he does Trova, of course. Give it a Bakiva, that's how Rabbi Akiva learns. Omelir to Bishmal. So Rabbi Shmuel says, "Vale kvanem v'nichrusa." Yes, but you also have in the psukim over there where it says v'nichrusa. So if you're going to dash in from hikoris and tikoris, what are you going to do with v'nichrusa? Are there three worlds? There's only two: this world and the next world. So you don't have. What are you using now? Rashi and Tosfos both point out that like this: Rabbi Akiva is the one who holds that Megadif is mevorech hashem. So therefore, he wouldn't have another place to learn koris for avodah zarah. He has to learn from hikoris tikoris. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel himself holds that Megadif means somebody who curses Hashem. So he's not really asking, according to Rabbi Akiva, why does it need to say v'nichrasa? Because again, according to Rabbi Akiva, we have a very good reason why it has to say kardes, and why it has to say v'nichrasa. One to tell us a person is chayav kardes, and then the other two to tell us in this world and the next world. Rather, it's Rabbi Shmuel himself is explaining, I myself, who hold that this pasuk is referring to avodah zarah. not to Mevorach HaShem, but rather, for example, the singing to Avodah Zarah, how would I explain this? Given that according to me, then we don't need an extra pasuk to tell us Karis Avodah Zarah because we have other psukim for that. Rashi gives it examples of that in other places in Shas where we find that where a Tana or an Amoda will do that. He'll ask something to his opposite number where he's not saying this question is not really so much on you. The question, I understand your opinion, but I myself, looking from the point of view of my opinion, let me explain to you how I would understand this puzzle. So Rishmal says, V'nichrasa ba'olam hazeh, the word v'nichrasa means that he'll be cut off in this world. He kores la'olam haba, and he kores means that he's going to be cut off in olam haba. What about what's the ti kores? That would be dibur Torah. Kolashim ne'adim, the Torah speaks in normal human language, the way that people would speak in the time when the Torah was given is they would use double expressions like that. He kores, ti kores. Same way as you have many other expressions like that in Chumash with double verbs. So according to him, you're not learning anything from the third one. Next, the Mishnah says, more cases where a person is chayiv skila, baal oiv, you have a person who does oiv magic. So what is oiv? It's a pisan hamadaba mishechiy. That is pisan, a type of magician who speaks from his armpit. So he brings up the spirit of the dead from the ground, and actually explains, and the spirit sits in his armpit and then speaks from under his armpit. There are other Rishonim who learn that maybe Mishechiyot means that he makes it like the dead person speaks from his own armpit, from the dead body's armpit. But Chalal, by the way, there's a big Machlokas Rishonim on this point, that Rambam holds that all these things that we're talking about, Uriv Yedoni, we're going to talk about further on in the Perek, various kinds of Kishuf, that Rambam holds none of them actually accomplish anything in the real world. They're all just sleight of hand and misdirection and fooling people and so on and so forth. So over here, for example, the Rambam defines the Baal Oiv is basically a ventriloquist. He makes it sound as though the sound comes from his armpit or from the dead person's armpit or from the ground or whatever is when I talk in the Gemara. On the other hand, there are Mephoshim who learn that, no, there is a certain validity here. We're going to talk soon, for example, about the Baalas Oiv with Shoal, for example, whether anything actually happened over there. In fact, the Vilna Goin in his notes on Yoredeya in the Simon where he talks about these dinim of Kishuf, he says that the Rambam was a little too much into his philosophy and got misled by it to say that Kishuf has no actual validity and it doesn't actually cause anything to happen. Anyway, so that's Baloi.
By Mitzrayim, it was an actual thing.
On the face of it, yes. So how the Rambam would explain that is a big question. The fact is that nevertheless, the Rambam could understand that it means that they were doing with sleight of hand. They made it look to Paro like they're creating blood and they're creating frogs and they're doing this and that and the other. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're actually creating actual blood or frogs that you can touch. All right. V'yid'oni, what is Yid'oni? Zamadabra b'fiv, this is where he speaks with his mouth. Meaning, the Gemara, Rashi brings from the Gemara, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but what it explains, a person takes a bone of a certain kind of creature called Yadua, he puts that bone in his mouth, and the bone starts talking by magic. Or again, according to the Rambam, he makes it look as though the bone is talking by magic. So as opposed to the Gemara talks about that the Oiv is like he flaps his arms and causes noises to come out, the Yadoni, actually the bone speaks by itself while it's in his mouth. An interesting thing that's brought in a couple of places in Chassidus is that the creature, there's a few different opinions what this creature is that's called Yadua. There's a couple of places in Chassidus where it associates it with the Rambam writes, where we just had in Gimel Prokin and in Clay and Hilchot at the beginning of Hilchot's Clay and Mikdash, the Rambam defines that myrrh, which we have as one of the ingredients of the myrrh, and we have a myrrh dror among the ingredients of the Shemana Mishka, and myrrh one of the ingredients of the Ketoreth, and the Rambam defines it as musk. From a creature, and he calls it Micham Midam Chaya Yadua Bahodu. That's from a certain known creature in Hodu, in India. So there are places in Siddhas, there's Maimur of the Alta Rebbe, and Torah Ur, I think someplace, that talks about that associates that Yadua known with the Yadua of R over here. So we're saying that this is the same creature where a bone of it can be used for Kishuf, which is the almost the greatest opposition to Elikus that can be, and yet from that same creature, you get a spice that's used for the Ketoreth and for the Shemana Mishka. So it's an example of Yisuna Omitot Lachosha.
Creature,
according to that, it would be the same creature. What? So on the face of it, it's a deer. On the face of it, it's a deer. There's a couple of people in Horus of Yurim over the years have commented on that, that it seems to be a disconnect, because, yeah, the creature that we get musk from is the musk deer, whereas the Yadua, the Rambam defines as a bird, the Ramaphoshim would define it as the Asni Asada, a creature that's attached by a rope to the ground with its navel. Can it be the same creature? But nevertheless, the fact is, the Alter Rebbe and the Maimer equates them and says that it is the same creature. Anyway, Harela was skillah. So the Mishnah says when a person does actual oivu yudoni, he would be chayv skillah for that. The initial behem, the client who consults with the baal oivu, baal yudoni, baz hora is wound in the Torah not to do it. Al tifnu al oivus vela yudonim, but he's not chayv skillah for it. He would be chayv malchus for it. As far as the warning to the machashif himself not to do it is lo yimatzeh b'cha shoyl oivu yudoni. And then the punishment is in the last pasuk of Parshas Kedoshim, but even Yugamori sends mayhem bomb. Tosfos points out that no, if Al Tifnu El Ovis Vela Yidonim is a warning not to consult over Yidonim, then a person would be chayv Koris for it. Because right after that, in Parshas Kedoshim, it says that a person would get Koris. So no, Tosfos learns the other way around. The Nishal, the client who comes, he's warned from the Torah, Lo Yimotze B'chot. Now there's no punishment mentioned over there, so therefore he's not chayv any punishment. The Baal Ovi Yidoni himself would be warned by the fact that the Torah says, Al Tifnu El Ovis Vela Yidonim, and then the pasuk continues that a person is Chayev Koris, Vanefesh Ashutivna, Lovis Vela Yidonim, is Chayev Koris. So there you go, then, and there's the Koris, and there's the warning for it. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll talk more about Oiv and what all that's about. Okay, turning now to Mishnayos Midas. We are holding Perek Aleph Mishnah Zayin. So we started learning yesterday about the Beis HaMoked. There's a building built into the side of the Azara over here. So it's a building built into the side of the Azara, in our diagram over here, we have it half inside the Azara, half outside. The Rambam draws it all outside. So we said it had four little chambers in it. So now, Shnaim Sha'orim Hoyu LeBeis HaMoked. The Beis HaMoked had two gates, two entrances. Echad Pasuach L'Cheo, one was open to the Cheo, which we'll learn about the Cheo in the next parak, was an area of a intermediate degree of Kedusha between the Harabayas and the Azara. We'll learn about it in the next parak. So one entrance was open to the Cheo, the Echad Pasuach LaAzara, and the other one was open into the Azara. Amar Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda adds, Zeshar Yepasuach Ba'azara, the one that was opened into the Azara, Pishpish Katan Hayalai. There was the large gate, and we're going to learn in the next parak that the gates in the Beis Mikdash were generally 20 amas tall and 10 amas wide. But in this gate on the inside of the Beis HaMoked, says Rav Yehuda, There was a little gate. And there was a pishbush cotton hayalai. It had a little pishbush. A pishbush is a little gate. In English, there's a word for it, a wicket, which means basically when you have sometimes you have a big gate, sometimes you'll have a smaller gate next to it because it's easier to open and close. You see it sometimes, for example, think of like in a gated community. Sometimes you'll have, it would be a big gate for the cars, and then next to it there'll be a smaller door for pedestrians. Sometimes you'll also see, and you see this nowadays also, where the smaller door is actually built into the big door. The idea being, in other words, sometimes you'll want to open the big door, and sometimes you don't have that much manpower over there, you don't have as many people going through, and therefore you'll just open the smaller door that's built into it. Whatever the case, Rabbi Yehuda says, this door over here had a pishbush in it, or next to it, Shabbai Nechnos and Livlo Shes Azara, where they would go through that in order to check out the Azara. The Mishnah in Tamid tells us that every morning, one of the earliest things they would do is they would have two groups of people, one going in this direction counterclockwise around the Azara, and the other one going clockwise, and they would look in the various chambers and make sure all the kalim are in their proper places. It mentions over there in the Sefer Tamid, they needed 93 kalim for the Avodah, so they would go and check that they're in their proper places, and afterwards they would bring them out. A couple of interesting things of why do they need 93 kalim, and was it all the time they needed 93, or maybe only some of the time, and what it means up in Kabbalah, and there's a lot of different interesting explanations about that. One thing we have in the kinnis of Tisha B'Av, maybe this should help, we don't have to say them this year, but in any case, one of the kinnis has a line in there that the Mesharis woke up the morning after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, and he couldn't find the 93 clay sharis because the Beis Mikdash had been destroyed, so now that the 93, the Mishnah says that's how many they would take out. So that's the Beis HaMoked. Next, continues the Mishnah. Mishnah Ches, Beis HaMoked Kippah. The Beis HaMoked was a dome. Some Mephoshim learned that it means the whole thing was dome-shaped, other than usually in models and in the popular models of the Beis HaMikdash, you'll see that it's built as a square, rectangular building with a dome on top. But there is a possibility, looking at the words of the Bar Tanura on the Mishnah, it may be that the whole thing was built in a dome shape. Whatever the case, Ubayis Godelhoya, it was a large building, Mukaf Rividin Shal Evin. It was surrounded by stone platforms. You can sort of see here in the diagram, you know, these little cubes over here, those represent those Rividin Shal Evin. The Zikne Beis of Yeshenim Sham. So now, every week in the Beis Mikdash, there was a different Mishmar would serve in the Beis Mikdash, and each Mishmar was divided into a number of Batei of. The idea would be that each Beis of would serve one day of the week. It's machlokas among the Rishonim, whether there were six Batei of, and everybody would work together on Shabbos, or whether there were seven Batei of, a separate one for Shabbos, and maybe there were other possibilities. In any case, each day there would be a new Beis of coming to serve in the Beis Mikdash. So now, the Zikne Beis of, the elder Kohenim of that base of Yeshenim Shom. They would sleep over there on those ledges. Now, if the base of Moikud was half, if it had the Kedusha, if half of it had the Kedusha of the Azara and half of it did not, they obviously can't sleep in the side that has the half of the Azara, that has the Kedusha of the Azara. So in that sense, then, this diagram is not quite correct, because you can't have these Ruv and Shal Evan over here and over here. That would be inside the Azara. According to the Rambam, that the whole thing was outside the Azara and only had partially the Kedusha of the Azara, because it had a door into the Azara, then maybe it would work out better. That it could be all around. Mephoshim also discussed the question, do we mean that the Zikne Beis Av would sleep on the ledges themselves, or does it mean the ledges are more like steps, or more like stone steps to get up to, then there would be niches in the walls where they would sleep, they'd sleep in those. In any case, they had the keys of the Azara, biyodam literally means in their hands, but they didn't hold them while they're in their hands while they're sleeping, means the keys of the Azara were under their control. There were keys. Each of the doors of the Azara had a lock with a key. So now the Zikne Beis Av of that day would be holding on, would have the keys under their control, as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah. How they would do it, and the point is that they couldn't just open the doors. Nobody could just open the doors. They had to knock on the door and have these kohenim open it for them. There was actually a Mishnah elsewhere that talks about that the Beis HaMikdash had a Amarkalim. The Beis HaMikdash had a higher level of administrators where they couldn't open the gates without their permission. So some Mephoshim explain it means they needed both. It means that the Amarkalim needed to give permission and the Zikne Beis Av then needed to actually open it with the doors. Some learn that it just means that the Amarkalim would give the keys to the Zikne, that is the Zikne Kohuna and the Zikne Beis Av, and put them in charge of opening the gates, whatever the case. So the Zikne Beis Av would sleep over there. Meanwhile, the younger Kohanim, Pirche Kohanim literally means the ones whose beards are first starting to sprout, they wouldn't sleep on these ledges or on the niches by the ledges. Instead, they would sleep, each one of them would put his bedroll, like his sleeping bag, on the floor. Now, what are they doing sleeping when we said that in the first mission that they have to be guarding all night? So one possibility is that we may have, there's the ones who are guarding, and then there's the ones who are coming, who they're going to be the ones who are going to be doing the avodah the next morning. So those, they would come the night before, and they would sleep there, and then they'd be in the Beis HaMoked, and they'd be ready to do the avodah in the morning. Meanwhile, the guards, of course, would have to be up. The other way of looking at it is, look, even among the guards themselves, you often have shifts of guards. Sometimes you'll have, you know, one shift will be sleeping, while the next one is standing watch, and then they would switch off. The point is they had ish kistei ba'aretz. The point is that Rambam explains they wouldn't bring in beds. Wouldn't the Gemara actually explain there was not derech eretz to bring in beds, the same way as also guards on human palaces don't sleep on beds. So therefore they would have more like a sleeping bag over there, and they would sleep on that. Okay. Mishnah test continues. Mokum hoyisham ama al ama. In the Beis HaMoked there was a place there, one ama by one ama. The Tavla Shoshayish. On that space, there was a one amma by one amma square of marble. The whole Beis HaMikdash was paved with marble stones. They actually, in the last few years, they actually found fragments of that flooring in they have all of the digging that the waqf that the Muslims did on the Haram Bayis and threw out an enormous amount of material from it, and they gathered it up, and they're doing the famous Temple Mount sifting project. So they actually found bits of the floor over there. Anyway, but you had the whole floor was paved with expensive stones, with marble stones. So now there was one particular place in the Beis HaMikdash where there was a tile one amma by one amma, the tabasos akvorba, it had a ring attached to it as a handle so you could lift it up, the shashelas, and underneath it was a chain, shamata choso tluyisba, the keys to the gates were attached to that chain. He gives man an ilos, so now when it comes time to lock up the gates of the Bais Mikdash for the night, he'd be at the tabla, but tabas, then one of the kohenim would lift up the tile using the ring, but not also master chesmin hashoshalas, take off the ring, take off the key ring off the chain, the noah kohen mifnim, and then the kohen would lock the door from the inside, so, and then again, the elder kohenim are sleeping on the benches or in the niches, and the younger kohenim on the floor, or ben Levi, Yoshem Levi Machutz, and meanwhile there would be a ben Levi sleeping outside, because again, like we learned before, wherever the kohenim are watching, there has to be a Levi watching as well. Now, we learned in Mishnah Aleph that there was a Levi guard post in the Lishkas HaKorban, but in addition we said, so in one of those small rooms in the Beis HaMoked, but in addition we said there were a group of kohenim watching in the Beis HaMoked itself, so wherever there's kohenim watching, like the Levium, someplace nearby, so therefore someplace outside the Beis HaMoked, there would maybe like here or here, there would be a Levi sleeping. Or again, no, a different view says not Yoshev, but rather Yoshav, they would be sitting outside at his guard post. Once they finished locking the doors, they put back the key ring onto the chain. He takes off the key, he puts the keys back on the chain, puts the tile back in its place, and he puts a sleeping bag on it, and he goes to sleep. And that way nobody can take the keys without permission. Mishnah continues, suppose that one of the Kohenim who was on duty in the Beis HaMoked, or who was sleeping in the Beis HaMoked, as the case may be, what if he became a Baal Keri? It can happen, a person at night has Keri, so now he's Tomei. He would go in a Mesibah that goes under the Bira. A Mesibah, there's different Mephoshim talk about Mesibah, can either mean an underground tunnel or it can mean a spiral staircase. So it could be both, of course. It could be that there was a spiral staircase leading down to a tunnel. We learned previously that one of the small rooms was Bo Yodin Leves HaTvila. They would go down to the mikveh, so that spiral staircase or the tunnel, as the case may be, would start over here. So he would go in that tunnel that goes under the Bira. The Gemara elsewhere has machlokas. What does Bira mean? Does Bira mean the entire Beis HaMikdash complex, or does it mean a specific building in or around the Beis HaMikdash called Bira? In particular, actually, we know from Josephus's histories, and we know also to a certain extent from archaeological findings that there was a fortress north of the Beis HaMikdash. So, in the times of the Romans, that fortress is called the Antonia Fortress. That's actually when they broke into the walls of Yerushalayim, Shivas of the Talmud, they broke into that fortress, the Romans. But some say that beforehand, in the time of the Hashmonaim, at least that fortress was called Bira, and maybe that's what the Mishnah means over here, that it goes under the Bira. So in that case, in other words, the point would be, then he's going from here, and then he's going in a tunnel that goes to the north under here. So he goes under the Bira. The Haneris Dokin Mekanamakan, and there'll be lamps lit on both sides, so you can see his way. Adcho Magila Besatvila until he reaches the mikveh and toibles over there. Now what does he do after he goes to the mikveh? So here the Mishnah only brings one opinion of what he would do. In the Sefer Talmud, it brings a different opinion. The Gemara in Yoma explains that the Sefer Talmud and Midas were written by two different Tanoim, so they have different opinions on the subject. So the Tana in Talmud says that what he would do is after he tovled, the Mishnah in Talmud also mentions, by the way, there was a bathroom over there, because a person has to go to the bathroom before he goes to the mikveh. If he goes to the mikveh with still having and afterwards he has to urinate or defecate, then it wouldn't be good. Then it would be considered like a chatzitza, kind of. Anyway, but not really a chatzitza, but whatever, it would be metamehim again. But anyway, there, the Mishnah says that then he would come back to the Beis HaMoked and stay there until the morning, and then he would leave. Our Mishnah just says that he went to the Beis HaTvila. Rebbe Lezman Yaakov says specifically what he would do is the Mesibah Halachas Tachas HaChel. He would go again in that underground tunnel that goes under the Chel. Yotze, he would go out for Holach Lebe Toddi, and he would go out through the Toddi gate, which we learned before was the northern gate of the Har HaBayis. So here we learned previously we said that Toddi gate Loi Hari Meshamish Klum, it wasn't used for anything. According to Rebbe Lezman Yaakov, it was used for this kind of case where a Kohen became Tomei in the Beis HaMoked. So in other words, Rebbe Lezman Chazman Yaakov does not allow him to return to the Beis HaMoked, like the Tana of Masechta Tamid does. Instead, he says, once he toivels, he has to continue going out through that tunnel and go out Shaar Tadi, and then he can make his way home from there.
Shaar is also locked overnight or not?
Apparently not. So apparently, even if it's locked, even if it's locked overnight, then apparently you get maybe it was
just guarded and not locked.
It was guarded by one group of Levim, but wasn't necessarily locked. Yeah, I guess it had to be. Or if nothing else, I mean, if the Levim are guarding over there, they could lock it, but they could also open it up for him to go. The point is, in other words,
it's a gate that's outside
It's in the Harabayis. The point is, a Tevul Yoim is allowed in the Harabayis. A Tevul Yoim is even allowed in the Chil. But he's not allowed in the Ezra's Noshim, and he's certainly not allowed in the Azorah itself. So according to the Tana of Mishnayos of Masechta Talmud, fine, there's no choice. Let him come back at least and stay in one of the rooms of the Beis HaMoked until the morning. At least that room doesn't have the Kedusha of the Azorah. Whereas according to Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, he can't do that. But the fact that he's going in an underground tunnel, by the way, even if it goes under the Beis HaMikdash, is not a problem. The Gemara tells us in Pesachim, that Mechilos Slain is Skadshu. Underground tunnels under the Beis HaMikdash don't have Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash unless they're open into the Azorah itself, which this one was not.
Even if it's
underneath the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself, it still wouldn't have the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Chafal of Tammuz. The first and second Beis HaMikdash were destroyed with iron weapons. Therefore, we know we couldn't use iron in the Beis HaMikdash. But the Mikdash of La'asid Lavoi, since that's going to be an eternal building, which is never going to have, never, no Churban, is Shayach there, therefore there's no concern of Barzal of La'umas there, because in the future, the whole concept of Barzal of La'umas there is going to be Nisbatal anyhow, because they're going to be making their iron weapons into plow blades and whatnot. Therefore, in fact, the third Beis HaMikdash can and will, in fact, be built with iron to represent, and that will demonstrate the higher aspect and the shlemos, the fact that iron, which destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, is now turning into iron that's used for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Continuing in Hilchos Tzitzis of the Alter Rebbe, Siman Chof Beis. So when a person buys a talus that's ready to wear as is, it already has the tzitzis on it, then he would make a shech yonu when he buys it. Later on, in the halachas of Birkas HaNenin, the Alter Rebbe mentions, he refers to there. We don't have those halachas in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, but we do have it in Hilchos Birkas HaNenin from the Alter Rebbe. Now, he does not make any bracha when he makes the tzitzis. Unlike, for example, in Kundra Sakhar, and Alter Rebbe mentions, for example, that, let's say, Kisi Adam, you make a bracha by Kisi Adam, but that's, there, in fact, also you have a machlokas, whether, in any case, if you do Kisi Adam for the first time, but you say Shech Yanu, there's a machlokas about that also. But in any case, here you know. On the other hand, if you buy a beged, and then you make a malbush out of it, you don't make a Shech Yanu then, because you don't have the simcha of it yet. After you make a malbush, after you make a talus out of it, and after you make tzitzis, then you would make Shech Yanu when you put on the tzitzis, and that way it'll count, and that way the bracha will count for that as well. If he didn't make the bracha when he put on the tzitzis, or if the beggar didn't have dalad kanfas, you don't have tzitzis, then he makes shech yonu the first time you put it on before you say leisata for tzitzis. Now, on the other hand, if the beggar has four corners, but you're not putting tzitzis on it, or if it doesn't have four corners and therefore it doesn't have tzitzis, then you say shech yonu on it the first time you wear it. So in short, basically, you make shech yonu either when you're making the tzitzis yourself or when you're putting it on the first time. And the more widespread minhag is to just say shech yonu as it is. You buy a ready-made talus, you're not putting on the tzitzis itself. So therefore, so you make shech yonu when you buy it or when you wear it for the first time.